From the creators of Haylorlene, it's Haylorlene!
Also known as The Bad Parenting Hour.
Also known as your favorite podcast ever. I'm Hannah Moskowitz.
Oh, I'm Kat Helgeson.
Someday she's going to get it.
I'm pretty sure everyone knows who I am already.
Okay, but what, I'm going to introduce myself and you're just going to sit there because, like, you're too good for it?
Well, I'm more famous than you.
You're more famous than me?
Yeah.
Brand new news. This is new information. Sorry, I haven't spoken English all day, so we'll see how my English goes. I'm in sign language class, so I'm signing for 8 hours a day. I was at the grocery store and I was realizing I needed to explain to this woman that I knew I shouldn't be in the express line, but the guy who worked there had put me in the express line despite me having too many groceries to be in the express line. And I was trying to think about how I was going to sign this before I remembered I could just fucking say this to her in English. And then also that I would never say this to her in English because I avoid awkwardness at all costs. And so I just frantically avoided eye contact with her.
That is why I always go through the self-checkout.
Oh, fuck. I can't handle that. So that's the kind of quality story and storytelling prowess that you're here for. If you're new, I apologize that you found this godforsaken podcast. Every week we read a book by Lurleen McDaniel, who has written many, many, many books about kids with usually various terminal illnesses. And we read them, we tear them apart. It's a good time.
Yeah.
We'll talk more about patron stuff at the end, obviously, because shilling ourselves is the real reason we're here. But you should know that the first part of Switch, the book that Kat and I wrote together and are doing as a serial audiobook, is out. And that is free and open to non-patrons as well. So you should go get a listen to that.
You should also know that none of the I'm going to practice saying words. None of the subsequent sections will be free and open to non-patrons. You will have to become a patron.
Yes. Yes. But we're supposed to just, like, reel them in with the free stuff. And then they're like, ah, fuck! And it's too late. They've already been reeled in.
Yeah, but it's not a trick. It's a try before you buy sort of situation.
No, it's a trick.
Would you say, Hannah, that it's a bait and switch?
Oh, fuck you.
No, you love it.
Fuck you. No, I hate it. I hate your puns. Oh, shit.
That was a wonderful pun, and you know it.
It was the worst thing that's ever happened to me. All right. Listen. We talked about doing a thing. We wanted to give shout-outs to other podcasts that we like.
Mm-hmm.
Should I get that out of the way here?
Yeah, we can do that.
All right, so I mentioned this one briefly, so I'm going to go more in depth. This is a very popular podcast, so it's probably known by most of our listeners, but it's called My Favorite Murder. And I mentioned it because the hostesses remind me quite a bit of me and Kat, in which we've got Georgia, who is younger and neurotic and bubbly and has cats and is Jewish. And then you've got Karen, who's the older one, who has dogs and is kind of deadpan and is an atheist who was raised Catholic. And there's just a lot of eerie similarities. But it's also just a really fun podcast. These two friends get together every week. They have a murder prepared and they discuss their murders. They're poorly researched and very conversational and chatty. And it's a really good time. I listen to them when I'm doing my enormous drive to my sign language classes. So that is my podcast recommendation for you, Karen and Georgia. If you're listening to this, I love you very much.
So I found a podcast which is called Love You Like Crazy.
Okay.
And it talks about various YA books. I listened to the episode about the Westing Game.
Oh.
I had a blast, and the podcasters had a lot of fascinating things to say. I'm going to check out some of their other podcasts.
I didn't know you'd read Westing Game.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's one of my favorites. It's not YA, but it's one of my favorites.
I think it's from a time when the definition of what counted as YA was just a little more fluid.
I think it's from before YA existed.
Right. That's the time I'm talking about.
Okay. Alrighty, so that is our recommendation corner, I guess, for you. Do we have any other updates, or do we just get into this book?
I guess we just dive in.
Alrighty, so remind me the title of this book, because I can never remember it.
Alright, so the title of this book is Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep, and it...
That's the one.
By the title, you would think that it's a partner to a book we read previously, If I Should Die Before I Wake.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have any characters in common with that book, and doesn't really seem to be paired with it. but it does seem to have a lot in common, like, thematically and in terms of what the story is about. Yes. Mm-hmm. So I do think those books are kind of companions to each other.
This was kind of like a better version of If I Should Die Before I Wake, right?
Yes. Lurline is hitting her stride.
I enjoyed this book. I mean, I thought that the characters were much better than many that we've seen. This was definitely the best love interest we've seen.
Yeah.
He had like one line that was uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty good for these. He had a line about how he was sick of females crying. And I'm like, all right. But like,
yeah, but he was mostly talking about how he has a lot of sisters, I think, wasn't
he? Yeah, I know. It was just the use of the word females, but okay.
Yeah, I'm not into that either.
Carrie, our main character, I was really drawn to. I thought she was great. She was complex. When I knew that it was so, it was another character who's in remission, and I was so ready for another character who all she talks about is how much she's worried that cancer's going to come back and how she's still defining herself by her cancer. And that was present in Carrie, but in a way that felt a lot more nuanced. But before I go into her, you should give us a summary.
Okay, so Carrie is in remission from cancer. She had it maybe 4 or 5 years ago. It's not super clear, I don't think.
She was 11 and she's 16 now.
Yeah, so about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And her parents were not...
She's 15, sorry. That was wrong. She's 15.
Okay. Her parents are not super involved in her treatment, and we will address that, but now they have split up, and Carrie's living with her mother, and her younger brother's living with the dad, and they're kind of navigating the tricky waters of having a divorced parent family. And Carrie's having to go in for the occasional test and figure out if her remission is going well, which it is. And then did she meet him in therapy?
It's a support group.
Yeah, she's going to support group, and she meets... what the hell is his name?
His name is Keith.
Thank you. She meets Keith, and Keith was also in remission from cancer. His remission went away once, but then he achieved remission again, as mm-hmm. I understand it. Mm-hmm. And he's a nice boy, and they hit it off, and they decide to work together on the Cancer Kid picnic that's taking place. At the picnic, they're playing the softball game, and somebody whacks a line drive and it dislocates Keith's shoulder. So when he's in the hospital getting that taken care of, it's discovered that he has advanced stage cancer, basically.
Mm-hmm. And it's metastasized.
It's metastasized. And there's nothing left that the doctors can do for him. So basically he's on the clock.
Yeah.
They decide to bring him home and do hospice. Mm-hmm. And Carrie is involved with that. She comes over to his house all the time. And she goes on vacation to his family's cabin with them, which mm-hmm. is exactly what happened in If I Should Die Before I Wake.
It sure is. They don't get in a canoe this time, though.
There is no canoe. They just walk by the lake, I think, or in the woods or something. They just walk
by the lake. It's a little different.
It's a little different. And, you know, Keith's condition deteriorates, and we get basically the last, you know, fifth of that John Green book that everyone always talks about, where the boyfriend is dying.
Yes.
And then he dies.
Yes.
Carrie at no point in this gets cancer again or has any kind of relapse. Mm-mm. She just has to deal with, you know, watching this happen to her boyfriend, discovering...
They are never official boyfriend and girlfriend. There's no kissing.
Okay, watching this happen to the boy she has a crush on.
Mm-hmm.
And she's discovering that she has these skills as a caregiver. And she's dealing with her broken family.
She ends up deciding to go live with her dad when her mom wants to move them to a small apartment and have them change school districts. Yeah, we have a lot to talk about with the mom.
With the mom and the dad both.
I think saying that she had a crush on Keith is kind of reductive of how she felt about him, though. Like, her love for Keith felt very real to me. One part, in fact, where she said that she didn't love him because love was supposed to feel good and this was just painful. And that just made me be like, oh, God, honey. Like, I felt for her there.
Yeah, me too. But I also think the idea that love is supposed to make you feel good all the time is a childish thing. And so she's having a coming-of-age moment about it.
Exactly. It was her realization that love isn't just supposed to make you feel good. You know, it was kind of foreshadowing that.
Right.
But, I mean, her feelings for Keith were very important. And I think it was such a big difference. And this is something I'm going to get into a lot more later. But the difference between this and If I Should Die Before I Wake really is that the main character had that experience with illness.
Yeah.
And it made such a difference.
It really did. Like, I did not feel bad for what's-her-name and the other one at all. Deanne?
Yeah, sounds right.
Yeah, I mean, she was just supposed to be a volunteer at the hospital, and then suddenly she's glomming onto this family that's undergoing a tragedy. And I know she cared for the guy, but, like, this is not your experience.
There was a similar thing in this where she was absorbed into the family very quickly. Mm-hmm. But that's sort of just something that I chalk up to how short these books are. It's sort of, I think, a suspension of disbelief with the relationships have to move very quickly in these books.
I also find it more believable for the reason you mentioned, because they have the shared trauma, because, you know, Carrie has been through this.
That's true. All right, so let's talk about these various families.
Okay.
Keith has a very great family. He's got his parents who are together. He's got, I think, 4 or 5 siblings who are lovely. But he still does have a feeling of separation from them. And there's still something that he needs and Carrie that he can't get from them. Whereas Carrie, at one point, says, I don't have a family, I have parents. Which was a little sad, because she seemed to, and we only saw a little bit of her little brother, but she seemed to really care for him. But, so she has her parents who are divorced. Her mom is dating a new guy named Frank, who is nice but boring. And he's pressuring her somewhat to do things.
Yeah, I don't think he is that nice.
For a Lurleen book, he's not, you know, the devil. I mean, we've got her dad who, let me get this sentence for what her dad did. When she's in the hospital and the doctor says, we need to run some tests, his reaction is, her father had slammed his beefy fist violently against a nearby wall and shouted, I want my little girl out of this place. Kat, I want to take you on a journey.
Okay.
You are an 11-year-old girl. You are in the hospital. The doctor has said, all the doctor said is, we need to run some more tests. Is there any universe in which our dear friend Todd Hugson responds to this news by punching a wall violently with his beefy fist and yelling, I want my little girl out of this place?
Well, let me tell you something. He doesn't have a beefy fist. But well, no. Well,
he might have back then.
No, there is no such universe. And I'll tell you something else.
This is just purely unfathomable to me. I cannot picture this.
And I'll tell you something else. My father was in Vietnam. Like, not literally, but he was in the war.
Yeah.
Carrie's father is sitting with her at one point and explaining why he wasn't involved when she was in the hospital. And he says to her, he says this to her, that he got his fill of death in Vietnam.
Like, how about his description of Vietnam?
Like, I'm
Vietnam
sorry.
Was a hot, stinking jungle, and I wish we could have blown it into the sea. I just wrote, well then. Very nuanced race relations for my friend Lurleen McDaniel.
Personally, I can't imagine if I was in the hospital that my father would refuse to be there with me because he was just done putting up with death because he was war.
There's her parents are abysmal, and the Vietnam is part of an attempt to justify their characterizations, and it is somewhat effective for the dad.
I don't think so at all.
It's not great, but he does remember. He does get change his behavior. She says after they open up about Vietnam,
does
he makes more of an effort to be there for her. Yeah, he doesn't come to kind of the death party at the end, but she makes a point of saying he would have been here if he could. Think the relationship has been a lot better. So we're told. We're not shown, but we're told. Meanwhile, her mother, who is equally terrible, did not spend time with her when they were at the hospital. I had to write this sentence down in all caps because I was so angry about it. So she sits down with her name, Carrie, and tells her that, you know, I had a really hard time with you having cancer because my mom died of cancer and my favorite aunt died of cancer. And somehow this is new information to Carrie, and Carrie says she's sorry. And then her mother says, "You can't imagine what it's like to live with the fear that someday I could get cancer too." How could you fucking say that to your daughter who has had cancer? That she can't imagine the fear that it might possibly happen? This is worse than when her father warned her about the stench of death. And that was bad. This is... My two sentences I have in caps are, "Why do you tell your daughter with a dying friend about the stench of death?" Immediately followed by just this sentence and the word, "What?" So, the problems with the mom, really, I think for me, were that she is genuinely a terrible person. She says horrible things to her daughter. She has no understanding for the fact that she wants to be there for her dying friend. But we have conflated this with the fact that she is working and not staying home with the kids.
You know, the very first note I made was, is Lurleen going to make this about women working?
And she did, right? And it's a shame because there was so much that was genuinely terrible about her mother. Mm-hmm. But she's also allowed to work. And there was something that I caught when... So they're living in this house that she eventually needs to sell. And she mentions that, you know, it's falling apart. And she says, "It's not like your dad helps at all. He's in his fancy new house." And I was like, well, that fucking sucks. You got divorced. He's married and has enough money to buy a new house. And you're stuck in this little house that's falling apart and you have to work really hard. That sucks. So I got a little bit of sympathy for her there. I was like, well, he should be giving you some fucking alimony. What's going on? But yeah, she's a bad person. She is a lousy person. And yeah. Carrie's coming to understand this and extricating herself from her mother was beautiful. If we had managed to do that without villainizing working mothers at the same time, it would have been really stunning. But I think even with it, the fact that she realized that she needed to remove herself from her mother's house, and that one of the last things she said to her, I didn't get it down verbatim, but it was just something like, "I really hope that you're happy." Like, that's what she can do at this point, is she can wish her mother well. Because she has come to understand that her mother is not a person that she can rely on. And that, I thought, was really incredible and very powerfully done. And of course, she's got her stepmom, who's great.
Yeah, that's probably the best adult character in the book.
Oh, yeah, she's awesome. She's got one weird part. Oh, she kind of tries to scare Carrie about her getting cancer again. She's talking about how she likes living with her mom, and she's like, "But what if you get sick again?" And I'm like, "All right, pump the brakes a little, Lydia." But besides that, Linda. But it's with a Y to explain my confusion with the name Lydia. It's Linda. But she was great. She's much too good for the father, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, well, she talks about how her parents were divorced when she was a kid, and that what she learned from this was, "I promised if I would have a family, I would stay home with the kids." And I was like, okay, yeah. I'm going to tell myself that that's because you would want to spend all as much time as you could with your kids, and not because a woman working breaks up the family.
No, the lesson to take away from that is, if you get married, to stay with the person you're with if you have kids, unless it's really bad.
Yeah, well, I don't know the first fucking thing about divorce, but... I thought the way that we were not asked to forgive her parents, particularly her mother, was very powerful. I wish Lurleen would let us come down as hard on fathers as we are encouraged to on mothers at this point.
I came down as hard on the father as you are on the mom.
And that's great, but I mean, you know that the book was not pointing you in that way.
I do. But I do think the book encourages you to forgive them for being bad parents.
Yeah.
And I liked
that. It does.
You know, some people are bad parents, and not everyone has to be good at being parents. I mean, ideally, you find this out about yourself before you have children.
Yeah.
But, yeah, some people are not good parents, and it's all right, kind of.
And there are some people who are great parents at some things, and then not as great with other things. And I thought there was a great conversation with her friend Hella, who was a nurse, mm-hmm. where Hella was talking about parents who go through chronic illness with their children, and they put up with it for a long time and then eventually just can't handle it. And I thought that was such a beautiful conversation.
That's actually what I was referring to just now. Yeah.
Yeah. It was incredible. It was extremely nice. I have a lot of things that I thought went really well in this book.
Let me tell you, this is something I don't get.
Okay.
Okay, so every time her mom was being shitty, almost every time her mom was being shitty, it would be something to do with work. Can't you understand what a great opportunity this is for me? I can't be there for you because I have a chance to talk to my boss or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, so at one point she goes to Florida with her boyfriend, I think, who's also her colleague.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm going to bring you some presents from Disney World. Okay. Did they go to Disney World just to shop?
They may have.
That's really stupid. There are so many stores, like, outside of Disney World in Orlando that sell all of that paraphernalia.
Yeah, but Downtown Disney didn't exist then, though.
Yeah. But here's the thing. If they were going to Disney World, like, active Disney World, why didn't they bring their damn kids?
Yeah, rude.
Yeah. Terrible. Terrible.
Terrible people. Who doesn't bring you to Disney World? Far from the worst
thing this mother does, but I just...
Is it, though?
It's a flavor. It's a flavor of her terribleness that needed to be brought up.
You know what? I reminded myself. I mentioned that Downtown Disney did not exist then, and that made me realize we have not talked about our lessons from Lurleen.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of mine involves something very old that I was not aware existed. And that thing is the Farmer's Almanac.
That's mine too.
Okay, well, I actually have a second one, so why don't you talk about the Farmer's Almanac?
Okay, the Farmer's Almanac. Well, I'd heard of it before, of course. What I didn't know was that, I'm sure it's what you were going to say too, that the Farmer's Almanac makes these long-term weather predictions like a year in advance. And at one point in the book, when Carrie is trying to figure out what the weather is going to be like for the day of their picnic, she consults the Farmer's Almanac.
She goes to the library to look at the Farmer's Almanac.
Now, to me, this is crazy, because I understand I live in the age of Google, and I can just be like, hey, what's the weather right now, and find out. But when I was a child in the 80s, you could still turn on the Weather Channel. Or maybe it wasn't the Weather Channel, but like the news. I mean, there were ways of finding this shit out. You didn't have to go to some prediction that was made, you know, 5 months ago and see if it just happened to be accurate. Like, how are they measuring this? Like, they didn't have...
It's more than 5 months, actually. I looked it up. The Farmer's Market is published every September, so it's 7 months before Memorial Day.
My God.
I mean, and she's like, it can't rain. The Farmer's Almanac said it would be dry.
Yeah, she was so serious about this. Like... Keith is like, hey, it's gonna rain. And she's like, no, I asked the Farmer's Almanac and it was sure. Like, I really want to talk to one of my friends now who her parents are farmers and find out if this is a thing that farmers consult and rely on. Like, they must for planting purposes or something. Yeah. But like, that must be what that's for. I don't know. That's okay. So, Lurleen, thank you. I'm thank not going to use this in my real life, and I don't encourage any of our listeners to give this a try.
Okay, I actually have one that I will encourage our listeners to do, though. And this isn't something I've learned so much as something that I explored more deeply. So there's a couple times when they reference the Who's on First routine, and it's very cute. I, of course, am familiar with the Who's on First routine, but I had never actually watched Abbott and Costello perform it. And just to get a break from reading this book, I went on YouTube and I watched the 8-minute video of Abbott and Costello performing the Who's on First routine. And Kat, let me tell you, it's fucking hilarious. It is so much better than you would expect. It's so great. It's got a very, like, do you know Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yes.
You know the game when Colin will be able to say everything he wants, but, like, Ryan and Wayne will only have 2 lines that they're allowed to say.
Yes.
And eventually near the end, Colin starts losing his fucking mind and, like, saying the lines along with them. And it's, like, really funny. It's basically that. And I had a fantastic time watching the entire Who's on First routine, which is much longer than I thought that it was. There's a pitcher and a catcher and a... It's extremely funny. I recommend going on YouTube, watching the Who's on First video. It's a good time. It's a good 8 minutes.
Okay, supplementary material for our listeners. Go watch that. Yes. And further supplementary material. This is kind of a callback, actually. When you say Who's on First, of course, that takes me back to the Westing game. So
what?
Yeah.
That's right. I actually thought about the Westing game when I was doing it.
So
they have a restaurant that's called Who's on First.
I encourage our listeners to read the Westing game if you have not.
That was actually my first introduction to the Who's on First routine, was the Westing game when I was a kid.
I feel like you missed that joke if you don't already know.
I sure did miss that joke. That's one thing that makes Westing Game not a young adult book, in my point of view, is that it's filled with jokes that are not going to be picked up by children.
I agree, but I think it's kind of like the movie Shrek. Like, you can watch it if you're a kid, but then when you
cannot compare the Westing Game, a literary masterpiece, to Shrek.
Shrek has a lot in it that you don't understand if you're a kid, and then you go back and watch it again when you grow up, and you just like
fucking what? Onions have layers?
No, not onions have layers.
God, fucking Shrek.
Like Lord Farquaad.
What about Lord Farquaad?
It means fuckwad. They're saying Lord Fuckwad.
Fuckwad.
Wait, did you get that when you were a kid? I didn't.
No, but that's the kind of nuance that we're comparing to the Westing game?
Yes!
I'm deleting you from this podcast. This entire podcast is going to be me arguing with no one because I have just deleted your voice. Between the pun and this, it's too much for me.
Hannah, no one's going to listen to that.
Everyone will listen to that. Just thinks you're more famous than I am.
I am more famous than you are. I'm so famous.
Get out of here. All right. What are we talking about? A book?
A book by Lurline McDaniel.
Oh, all right. Should I talk about some stuff? I didn't really do a literary analysis so much, so I don't want to say that I'm doing a literary analysis, but I'm doing an analysis of a book.
Well, that is literary analysis. That's what literary analysis is.
Right. But I'm not doing, like, getting too much into, like, the philosophical, theoretical stuff that I usually get into.
You're not going to compare it to any classical structures.
I'm not.
That's okay.
I'm just going to talk. How do I feel about that?
You know what? I appreciate everything that you bring to the table.
Well, shit, Kat. I appreciate everything you bring to the table, too.
Thank you, Hannah.
That hurt. That hurt me inside. All right. Ugh. When did this become a nice podcast? It's like later seasons of Supernatural when they hug all the time. We're on later seasons of Hey, Lurline, where we're kind to each other.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
We're going to go back to doing cases of the week.
Yes! That's the thing, though. It's like when I do just like comparing it to the classic literature of the week, right? And now I'm breaking out of that.
Yeah.
This is the Growing the Beard episode, to speak in TV tropes. Okay. So, what I'm going to talk about actually starts out the same way that I do the literary analysis, where I read Waiting for Something Weird. And this was actually, there's kind of two things that combined. One of them is on one of the first pages when her mother refers to your disease. Carrie thinks to herself, your disease, her mother said. To her, it would forever be Carrie's problem. And I think to a non-sick person, this might seem extremely cold for the mom to just voice the disease up on the daughter. But for me, this one line felt like one of the truest things that Lurline had said up till now about the illness experience, is that the person does take ownership of it, and it is hers and not her mother's. So I thought that was interesting.
I'm sorry, I need you to clarify. Are you siding with the mom on that or with Carrie?
I'm not siding with anyone. I'm just taking note of that attitude being expressed.
Okay.
And then the next page, we had a line when she is getting some sort of test done at the hospital, and it says that she watched in bored fascination. That's not a thing. You cannot be bored and fascinated. That's a contradiction. That cannot happen. So I started looking for contradictions or just things that didn't add up, which, as we have learned from books such as Mother, Please Don't Die, which was a piece of ergodic literature that was supposed to make us feel as if we had a brain tumor. It's not always hard to find these things in Lurline books, and this did not let me down. But they usually came in very specific times. So, for example, at the first support group meeting, there was a bowl of punch, and there was a sign over the punch that said, This is not Andreamycin, which is a chemotherapy drug. Why would it be? Does it look like it?
Well, I think the joke is that it does, yeah.
No, it's not served in a big punch bowl for people to drink. There is no logical reason that it would be that. No one would ever think that it could be that. It's just a joke shoehorned in to have something to do with cancer. It's fucking stupid, but let's work beyond it being fucking stupid and think, why would anybody think that? They wouldn't. And then there's things like she looks up at the clouds and wonders if they taste like cotton candy. No, of course they don't taste like cotton candy. You are a 15-year-old girl. You know what clouds are made of. Why would they taste like cotton candy? You know this. And so I was getting a lot of feelings of thinking, why would anybody ever think that thing that you were thinking? And then her first conversation with Keith in the library, she has lines when she calls him Daniel Boone and he says, are you saying I'm boring you? Is Daniel Boone known for being a boring person? This doesn't add up, but she understands him right away. At one point she says, how many people are in your family? He says six. And so he says, your mother cooks for seven people?
I saw that one.
First of all, the fact that a copy editor didn't catch this blows my mind. This should not have been allowed to go to print, and as an author, it pisses me off. But okay, it's intentional. So he has somehow, you know, excluded himself from this. I mean, if someone asked me how many people were in my family, I would never say three, not counting me. That's ridiculous. But he has done this, and she immediately understands it. So It's basically the two of them really picking up what the other one is putting down, even what the other one is putting down is illogical. And it made me think about the illness community and things only making sense to people in that community and how we as the reader were meant to feel isolated from the understanding that they have. And I think one of the most key moments of this was later in the book, her mother rapidly switches the conversation, as she is wont to do, away from the topic of Keith dying and talks about painting the house.
Right.
And Carrie says, what? And it says, feeling as though she'd missed an important line in a book. And isn't that how we, as assumed healthy people reading this book, sort of feel watching the sick conversations? It's the same way that she feels when she's interacting with healthy people. So it's kind of a mirror. There's this great line when Keith is talking about how the doctors treat him now that he is incurable. And he says, we're alone, all right. After the doctors know for sure that you're beyond their treatments and cures, they act like you don't exist. I became a non-person, an embarrassment to them. Whew, that is good. And I think that this book, it nailed being sick in a way that her previous books have not.
I agree with
and
that.
And part of that, I think, was because the main character was not actively and dramatically sick. And I think Lurleen can fall a bit into the active and dramatic part, right? And not focus so much on the reality in the day-to-day life. You know, she's got people really horrified by illness in her books. And here we have a character who is not horrified by illness. And who is not shocked by it. She's living with this reality. And I think it takes a character who doesn't have an active illness in a Lurleen book in order to have someone who acts the way that people with most chronic illnesses actually do, who are actively sick, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
We have to go, like, down a level to make Lurleen add up here. But there was some great stuff here. And just stuff like, her mother sounded threatening as if daring her to get sick again. We're supposed to hate her mother there. And it's not good of her mother, but it feels real. When she was asking Keith why his parents agreed to let him do hospice, he says they encouraged me to make my own decisions. And she says, but this is different. He says, no, it isn't. You're fucking right, Keith. No, it is not different. This is your illness and your decision. And it was... there was very nice moments in here about the illness community and the disability community, I think, and about the understanding that goes on there and how I hinted at this earlier, you know, but Keith has this great, strong family and it's still not enough. he still needs something outside of that, someone who really understands this aspect of him.
Yeah.
There's still something that you're not sharing with the people who are very close to you. And there's nothing you can do about that. And I thought, especially with the conversation with Hella, where, you know, she mentions really just the divide between hearing, I've been in Southern Cross all day, between sick and healthy people. And it was, this book never doesn't, it never tries to skirt around the fact that healthy and sick people are different, but it does that without automatically villainizing either of them. And it doesn't make it so much a bad thing that they can't connect. And I thought that that was very impressive. And I liked that a lot. So that's really my analysis. It's not going into literary theory as much as, I guess, sick theory.
Yeah, I liked it.
Thank you.
The only other thing that I have is I just wanted to comment on this, like, Lurleenism that mm-hmm. I've noticed she always does. So I'm going to read a sentence, and this is the kind of thing she does all the time.
Okay.
So she wrote, "Wouldn't you like to see Dr. Feynman in the mud? She named an oncology specialist popular with the kids."
Yeah, she likes to exposition us that way.
I really hate it. It drives me up a wall. Like, there are so many better ways to do that.
It's not great. I have a lot of lines that I wrote down just to discuss about different things. So we've got Carrie just being awesome, saying stuff like, he asks what she wants to do with her life. She says, "I want to rule the world." Someone tells her that she can throw something if she wants. She says, "I don't just want to throw something. I want to throw something at something." I liked that.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty good.
I have a few more illness moments that rang really true to me that I put in the wrong place in my notes. There was a thing when Keith was looking at an old man and thought, "It must be good to have your joints ache because you're old and not because they're eaten up with cancer."
Fair enough.
And I do not have cancer, but I feel that very hard. I feel a lot of jealousy of old people often. And I also have a lot of old people who try to relate to me.
Mm-hmm.
Being like, "Oh yeah, I know what that's like." And I'm like, "You really don't. I don't care if it feels exactly the same physically. It's not the same to have lived a full life and to be 26. It's not the same thing." So I understood that feeling. He was talking about the importance of having friends who were also sick and said, "Everyone understands what you're going through, but they don't treat you like you're going to break either." And that I thought was a really good summary. One of the first things that the mom's boyfriend said was, "How much room could two females living alone really need?" And I commented, "OMG, he's going to kill them," because that just seemed like something a murderer says.
I hated him so much. Didn't he say females a lot?
He did. He said it twice.
That's a lot for me.
It's a lot. To be fair, at one point he said female drivers, so at least it was an adjective.
Yeah, still.
Yeah.
Whatever. Although he was talking about something true, I think.
Yeah, he was saying insurance is lower for young female drivers than it is for young
men drivers. Yeah, that's just a fact, I think.
It is.
I'd give him a pass.
Yeah. I do want to talk about some weird thing that we saw earlier with Rob and Don Rochelle.
Was it when they were making out?
It was not. It was when he put her to bed and said, you're just too young for cancer. And that was repeated here. There was the idea that having cancer has made her grow up. This was told to her by her parents. And there's this idea that being sick is incompatible with being a child, that Lurleen keeps propagating, which is a strange position for her to take as someone who writes books about sick children. But she definitely seems to be enamored with the idea that illness makes you grow up really fast. And I feel like that's not universally true. And it's also just really troubling, the idea that it must happen, that illness and childhood are incompatible.
I think maybe what she's trying to do is refer to the fact that you have to contemplate your own mortality if you have a terminal illness as a child.
Yeah.
And most kids don't do that.
Right, but most adults don't do that either.
Nah, until I do that real all the time. Old.
Sure, but I did it when I was a kid too. I mean, we're weird.
Yeah.
And I think it's just, it's very erasing of the experiences of sick children, I think. To say that they are less children. You know? It, like, they're not real kids mm-hmm. because they're sick. I don't like that.
there's a...
It's like you have your children, and then you have your sick children, and that's just... They're all children.
There's the common axiom that if you have something bad happen to you in childhood, it makes you grow up too fast.
Yeah.
That might be what she's doing.
I mean, I don't think that she's trying to be troubling.
Well, no.
I just think that it's important to not separate sick children from under the umbrella of children. It's the same way, you know, there was that thing recently when Elizabeth Banks was saying that Steven Spielberg had never, was it Spielberg? Oh, God. Had never done a movie with a leading female cast that had done well.
I don't
And someone mentioned, it happened recently. So he was like, he's never done a female-led movie that did well. I'm just going to use the word female a lot now. And someone was like, oh, what about The Color Purple? And she just kind of blew that off. Because when she said woman, she wasn't thinking about those women.
What? I don't know that movie.
It's Black Women.
Oh.
So it's the Elizabeth. Idea... It's the idea of women, when you say, of people saying women and thinking white women and then black women as a whole separate thing. But those are all women. You can't separate black women out as a separate thing.
That's not a very intersectional way to approach that.
Exactly. It's looking at, because you wouldn't say white women. You wouldn't say white women and black women. It's people saying women and black women, and it's such a problem. And I don't want to compare directly disability and race, but it's sort of the same idea here as you're taking children and sick children. They're all children.
Yeah.
There's healthy children and sick children. So, how great was Judy the hospice worker? So she's a
Judy
goddess.
The hospice worker was pretty perfect.
She's amazing. She set them through and told them everything that was going to happen. When she wanted to go to the hospital, when his mom was panicking at the very end, one second possible, she's like, this is what you agreed to do. If you want to go to the hospital, I will absolutely support you. And just really calmly, but this is the plan that we had, and we knew and she was good. I want Judy just to come and explain my life to me.
Yeah, Judy can be my hospice person.
She sure can.
How did you feel about the fact that they called Keith's death his metamorphosis?
That was odd.
Yeah, that was a choice.
I mean, none of the religious stuff in this really hit home for me.
Oh, was that supposed to be religious?
I think the whole thing was...
I thought it was just weird.
It was definitely weird. She compared it to the tadpoles growing into frogs. It was a choice.
Maybe they can name one of the frogs Keith, and then it'll be...
Oh. But the thing, that part, not only was it odd... But it also really did not feel like Carrie's point of view to me. And the whole thing is, you know, it's in a distant third.
Yeah.
But that just felt not like her voice. Mm. There was actually one more moment that felt like it was not Carrie's point of view at all. And it was awkward. And it's when she's hanging out with the family and they're all like jumping on her and tickling her or something. And she sees Keith looking at them kind of like wistfully and thinking like, there was a time he would have joined in the tickle fights. There was a time he would have started them.
You don't know that.
Is this Carrie thinking this? Is this... It kind of felt like we were in Keith's head for a minute. So I was like, Carrie, you've definitely never been in a tickle fight with this boy.
Yeah.
What? You've known him for like a day. So that was strange. So keep an eye on your point of view shifts, Lurleen. We'll be watching.
I do want to ask you one more thing.
And we need your ratings.
Yes. There's a part where Carrie mentions... And she's referring to her and Keith, that mm-hmm. lowly freshmen don't mingle with sophomores.
Okay.
Is this a thing anywhere? Like, is in any high school in America?
My school had 5 people. I'm the wrong one to ask.
Like, yeah, I know it was not a thing in your school. I know it's not a thing in my school. But is this a thing anywhere in America? And I really want to ask the listeners, actually.
Yeah.
When you were in high school, or if you're still in high school, tweet us, please. Is this a thing that freshmen don't hang out with the sophomores and are not allowed to hang out with the sophomores? Is it that divisive?
I mean, I know no one wanted to hang out with our freshman class, but it's kind of because we were terrible and not because we were freshmen.
Yeah. I've never gotten the feeling that this is a real thing that exists in the world. I've only seen it in books.
Yeah. I have no idea. All right. Hit us with your ratings.
Okay. Which one do I start with?
I can never remember.
Syringes. All right. I guess I'll give it 2. Not because I feel that it was particularly inaccurate, but because I felt like it didn't address anything scientifically medical at all.
There was some weird conflation of leukemia and lymphoma.
Yeah. That was weird.
That I thought was a little strange. I'm not sure Lurleen knows that they're not the same thing.
I mean, she does make a distinction.
Yeah, but then she has Hella, like, reassuring her with leukemia facts when he's diagnosed with as being relapsed.
It's odd.
And I was like, but he doesn't have leukemia. He has Hodgkin's.
It's odd.
Yeah,
it is. I think she researched one kind of cancer, and then she probably found out the name of another kind, and she's like, well, it's probably the same thing, except it's in the bone.
Dawn has this cancer. I only know Dawn's cancer. She's my favorite.
Yeah.
That was my Lurleen impression.
I got it. I liked it.
Gotcha. Thank you. She probably has a southern accent. But
my name is Dawn.
Oh, that wasn't bad.
I have leukemia.
I'm southern, and I can't do a good southern accent. You should hear my mom try to do one. Like, my mom has somewhat of an accent.
You just have to, like, open your mouth really wide.
But she's got a complete inability to put on a stronger accent. Like, she can't do it. What she has is just the bare minimum.
Y'all.
That's as far as it's going. Oh, I say y'all all the time.
But... y'all. I don't know why I'm in a higher register right now. That's weird.
My ASL teacher was talking to me about my signing being kind of like sloppy and casual and lazy. Mm-hmm. And I was telling her, I was like, this is how I talk too. And she was like, really? And I was like, yeah.
I'm just signing with a southern accent, y'all.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to give the book 4 stars.
4 stars. It was pretty good.
It was pretty good. It dragged in places, and I absolutely have no tolerance for the way it tried to redeem the father.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it was all right.
Yeah, I thought, I did feel very touched by this book more than most of the others.
Yeah. Okay.
Broken Hearts?
Broken Hearts.
It was pretty sad.
It was, I guess, 3.
3?
Yeah. I'm not going to miss
Keith. He died!
I'm not going to miss him.
Oh, I am. Keith is cool. I mean, I wouldn't miss him as much if he was a girl, but...
I'm not going to miss him. It'll be all right.
I only really miss the women. I'm not going to cry over a dead man, but...
Yeah.
I should get a shirt that says
that. You know, I'm a little sad. It's fine. I don't feel like I knew Keith very well. I'm sadder about him dying than I was when whatever the hell Deanne's boyfriend's name was died.
His name was Matt. Why do I remember that?
I don't know. He was not memorable.
One of my favorite things actually about this book was how it ended. She's in the car with her stepmom and her dad, driving away from her mom's house, just looking at her mom's house. And that last scene, so we have him dying, and then we go to her moving her stuff out of her mom's house. And that last scene has, it mentions Keith, but it's not focused on him. And I thought that that was really great, actually.
Oh, yeah?
That last scene is very much about her journey and the improvements that she has made in her life and where she's going. And I thought that was so nice.
Yeah.
I felt like she was going to be okay.
Yeah, I think she will be.
So that is,
Now I lay me down to sleep.
That's the one. Now I lay me down to sleep.
Let me ask you really quick. Did you have that little poem drilled into your head the way I did as a kid? Or is that just a Christian thing?
It's just a Christian thing. I know it, but.
Well, you're fortunate.
I think I had like a poetry book that had it in it.
Man, it's creepy the way parents give their kids that poem as little kids. Like, if I should die before I wake, why would you? You don't have cancer.
It's just like. It was just hidden in a book that I had. Okay, so one of our lovely patrons is going to win this.
Yay!
Book. But first, we have to thank all of the lovely patrons.
I'll do it. Thanks, patrons!
No, Kat!
I'm just playing. You go ahead.
Oh, she's the worst at thanking the patrons. Well, while I bring up the list of the patrons, we should go over just the rewards real quick in case you are not already a patron and you want to be one, because we've got exciting stuff coming out. At the $1 level, you get the romance podcasts, you get access to Switch, which is a big deal,
yay,
and you get a lovely thank you that you're about to hear. It's pretty great. $5 level, all of that, plus you get a swag bag from Kat, and you got access to Hannah and Kat Dissect Themselves, which is a series where we tear apart our own books, discuss them really frankly. You don't want to miss it. $10 level, all of that. Oh, and I'm sorry, at the $5 level, you're also entered in the raffle, which I'm doing right now, obviously, where you can win a copy of the book. $10 level, all of that, plus, access to the web stream where you can ask us anything you want in the entire world, anything at all, anything you want. And we actually now have a new $10 patron, so we're going to actually have to start doing that. So if you want access to that, you need to get it on it. It's time. It's time. Otherwise, it's just going to be Paul alone asking his questions. I love you, Paul, but I don't think you want to do that. So
every get some friends. Every question you want.
Yeah, but Paul, get some friends to join you, man. $20 level, all of that. Plus, you get a copy of Switch right now. And you get entered every single month. Yes, to win a copy of one of me and Kat's books. Right now, you would be the only person there. So it would be pretty sweet. All right, let's thank some patrons. You ready?
I'm ready.
We've got our two secret patrons. First of all, thank you, secret patrons. And then Melissa, Emmett, Julia, Lynn, Parker, Betty!
Betty!
Kat, Jeffrey, Terry, Emma, Elizabeth, who also gets an exclamation point because Elizabeth has also left us an iTunes review.
Elizabeth!
Yeah, Paula, Kim, and Paul. If you missed it just now, Elizabeth and Betty, Elizabeth got exclamation points because they went on iTunes and left us a review. Thank you very, very much. Please go do that. It is free. It will take zero time and it means the world to us. Helps with our visibility, helps us get seen by other people, helps us get paid by other people.
Helps you get a swaggy exclamation point behind your name.
And this has been fun. Ask Elizabeth and Betty how much they like it. Benny actually changed their Twitter handle to Benny with an exclamation point. Did you see this?
Yes. It's wonderful.
That's the influence we have on people's lives here at Haler Lane. Making a difference. Speaking of influence and making a difference, do you know what we're reading next week?
I do not.
Would you like to know?
I think you'd better tell me.
Kat, it's the third Don Rochelle book.
It's Don! It's Don! It's Don Rochelle, y'all.
It's Don Rochelle, y'all. That's my southern accent. You got to hear it. All right. It's called So Much to Live For. I know, I just went a little British. Okay.
Okay, Scarlett.
I know, my mom is from, like, Dirty South, and I have, like, a southern Belle accent. I need to learn how to just talk like a fucking hick like my grandmother does, but I can't do it. Okay. This book, first of all, is 120 pages long, so that's exciting for us. 15-year-old Dawn Rochelle has survived cancer not once, but twice. No one knows the battle better than she does. That's why Dawn agrees to be a camp counselor for young kids with cancer, the same camp she and her best friend Sandy had attended. Now Sandy is gone. Can Dawn handle the memories? How can she help the kids if she is still hurting so much? Haven't we had a whole book since Sandy died?
Yes.
Is she still hurting all that much?
Yeah, haven't you ever lost a friend?
No.
Well, then you wouldn't know. It hurts.
I wouldn't. So that's Dawn. We're going to visit her again. And we will be back with you this week. I realized we forgot to do the giveaway just now. I read all the patrons and then did nothing with them. So let's see who was winning a copy of Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep.
Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep.
I'll give you a drum roll, Kat.
Drum roll, please. It's Kim.
Oh my God, it's my mom?
Yeah.
Mom, I'm sorry you have to read this book with this terrible mother in it. She won't read it, though, let's be real. So
you can donate it to charity if you want
she
to.
Can. She can. And then she's already better than the mom. By donating one book to charity, she does more good than Carrie's mom has ever done in her life. Okay. Were you going to say something? Sorry.
Yeah, this week is a good chance for everyone to be better than Carrie's mom. Yes. Literally do one good thing this week, and then you can celebrate how you're better than Carrie's mom. And if you want to tweet us and tell us about the way you are better than Carrie's mom, we will celebrate you.
We will. We will retweet you.
We'll retweet you.
You'll love it.
Better than Carrie's mom.
Better than Carrie's mom. Thank you so much for joining us here at Haler Lane in our two separate apartments on opposite sides of quadrants of the country. I really think there's this local radio station around here, and it always goes, from the glass enclosed nerve center. And I think we need a... and I drive past it all the time. It's just a concrete building. But I really think we need a glass enclosed nerve center for our... I'm going to start the next one that way. Okay. The next podcast, it's going to have our little music. It's going to be like... do, 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 whatever our music is, right? And then it's going to be me going, from the glass enclosed nerve center.
You're crazy right now.
Fuck you. Ow. All right. So, that was our podcast from the Glass and Close Nerve Center. We hope that you enjoyed. We hope that you will be back next week. We hope that you will rate, review, and subscribe. And we also hope that you will go to patreon.com/HaylorLane and give us all your money.
We know you will.
We need it more than you do. We'll buy better things than you do.
We'll see you next time.
Yeah, it'll be, just give us your money. We'll take care of you. We'll, like, wire you some back if you need it.
No, we won't do that.
We won't do it.
But we sure will thank you on air, though.
I'll think of you when I buy the food that I will get for everybody. And yes, thank you on air. It's great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Sorry for trying to take all your money.
Bye.
Not that sorry. Bye.